Thank you for listening to this message from Flow Church, a brand new church plant in the city of Melbourne, Australia. We pray that this word will help you experience and express the goodness of God in every sphere and season of life.
Cool. So here's a question. Here's a fun question to start the day. Those of you who have some level of familiarity with the Bible, which might be some of you, which would definitely be some of you, but again, there's heaps of you I haven't met, so I don't even know. But if you have some familiarity with the Bible, who would you say is the greatest prophet in all the Bible? Not a rhetorical question. I want to hear answers. Throw out an answer. Okay, front row. What do you think? Nobody's answering. Give me somebody. Come on. Elijah, okay, fair answer. Anyone else? Anyone have a take? An opinion? A favorite prophet? Jesus is a great answer. Yeah, I knew someone would say that. And that's like great, good work, very good. But let's level the playing field and just leave the prophets who are literally the Son of God incarnate out of it. Any other thoughts? Favorite prophets? Oh, who said that? Who said that? Okay. Hi. I haven't met you. that's a really cool opinion. It also happens to be the correct answer. So you get free lunch today. Everyone gets free lunch. I don't know if Sam mentioned that. We're having lunch after the service. We're having GYG Mexican. So that's lunch on us. So please stick around for lunch. And everyone gets free lunch, but you especially get free lunch. Because that is actually the correct answer. The Bible, this is, who's the greatest prophet? This is a question that the Bible actually tells us the answer to. And is no less than Jesus himself who tells us who the greatest prophet in the Bible is. And the answer is John the Baptist. I don't know if that's the answer you would have expected. It's certainly not the answer I would have expected. So let's get into that. So we read this in Matthew chapter 11. Can you read that? Cool. I can't read that on the back, so I'll read it here. So Matthew chapter 11, starting at verse 2. When John, that's John the Baptist, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Blessed is the one who does not stumble on account of me." And as John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. "What did you go out into the wilderness to see? A reed swayed by the wind?" In other words, like, did you go out to the desert to look at rocks or to look at grass? Probably not. That wouldn't be a very interesting thing to do. So verse 8, "If not, what did you go out to see? Did you go to see a man dressed in fine clothes? No, those who wear fine clothes are in king's palaces." In other words, you didn't go out to the desert to look at deserty things like rocks or grass, and you definitely didn't go out to the desert to look at palacy things. You went out, well, why did you go out? Why would anyone in their right mind go out into the wilderness? And so verse 9, what then did you go out to see? A prophet. Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. So pause there. It's worth recognizing that in ancient Israel, especially in first century ancient Israel, a prophet was a big deal. To be a prophet, prophets were about as revered as a person could be. So such that it was hard to even imagine how someone could be of higher status than a prophet, right? So, because how can you be more than a prophet? What more is there to be? And so, for Jesus to affirm that that John the Baptist was a prophet was actually very high praise, and then for him to say that he was more than a prophet was just ridiculous. Right? Okay, so Jesus says, verse 10, "This is the one about whom it is written, 'I will send my messenger ahead of you, who will prepare your way before you.' Truly I tell you, among those born of women," i.e. everyone, so out of everyone ever, "there has not arisen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet whoever is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he." Okay, so that last sentence, "whoever's least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he." Okay, that's huge. So let's just explain that briefly. The thing is that John the Baptist, he's the greatest prophet of the old covenant. He's the last prophet of the old era, and he's the greatest of them all. But a new covenant with Jesus, a new covenant has come and a new era has arrived, the age of the kingdom of God. And to be even the lowest person in that kingdom is to be greater than the greatest person of the former age. Okay, so that's amazing. That sounds like what my sermon should be about, but it's not. Because I just want to take, can we just, before like even thinking about that, can we just take a moment to acknowledge that out of all of human history up until Jesus, the award for greatest person ever goes to John the Baptist, greatest prophet in all the Bible before Jesus, Johnny B, as the kids call him. Don't you just love how, I love how blunt and unequivocal that is. Among those born of women, there has never arisen anyone greater than John the Baptist. God doesn't have favorites, obviously. Oh, except John the Baptist. No, he's the best person ever. And I kind of want to say, really? This guy? Because that is not necessarily who I would have picked or expected. I probably, if I had to pick someone, I probably would pick Moses, maybe Abraham, maybe Isaiah, someone who at least gets a bit more screen time than John the Baptist. Because John the Baptist is very much supporting cast in the Gospels, right? So here's the fun part. Here's where this gets really interesting. Because when Jesus said that John was the greatest, that really wasn't a hot take. That really wouldn't have been, it probably wouldn't have been something that would have been considered controversial to the people who were around that day, because people who had actually seen John's ministry would have all been like, yeah, that checks out. Probably the greatest prophet ever. Maybe even just the greatest man ever born, generally. That seems like a pretty reasonable conclusion. Seems like a pretty reasonable call to make based on what we've seen of John the Baptist. Because it's an often unrecognized historical reality about John the Baptist is that he was a super famous, popular, notorious prophet of his day. He had thousands of disciples. People flocked to the wilderness, which is not a fun place to go. People flocked to the wilderness just to see him, right? And so I want to take a moment to show you how big a deal John the Baptist was, because most of us just don't actually know. So let's begin with this. John the Baptist, and this might sound familiar to you if you know your Bible, John the Baptist was such a big deal that clearly a lot of people thought he was just the Messiah, right? Which is kind of hilarious because he was sent by God to point people to the Messiah to come after him, but he was doing too good a job of that and because people just thought it was just him. And this was to such an extent that all four gospel writers, so Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all four of them needed to begin their gospel, begin their story about Jesus with a clarification about John the Baptist, right? So let's go to John chapter 1. So this is the beginning of John's gospel. Excuse me while I get a bit of water. So This is how John begins his telling of the story of Jesus. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. Okay, now he's talking about John the Baptist, just so you know. I know that's a bit confusing because it's the book of John and it's written by a guy called John, but he's not talking about himself. He's talking about John the Baptist. That becomes clear as you read on, but I'm just telling you now so that you can follow this. He's talking about John the Baptist. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. He was not the light, okay, just to be clear. He was not the light, but he came to bear witness about the light. And I'm kind of thinking, thank you for being so clear that John the Baptist was not the light. I personally wasn't going to ask that question. I didn't think that John the Baptist was the light or the Messiah, but thank you for being extra clear that he wasn't. You seem a little defensive about this, if I'm honest. But the thing is that we modern Christians or modern people generally, we're not asking if John the Baptist was the Messiah, but that's because we have the benefit of hindsight. But first century Jews, they were asking exactly that question. So if we skip down to verse 19 of the same chapter. So John says, and this is the testimony of John. When the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, who are you? He confessed and did not deny, but confessed. I love how clear the author is being. He confessed and did not deny, but confessed, I am not the Christ. And they asked him, what then? Are you Elijah? He said, I am not. Are you the prophet? And he answered, no. So they said to him, who are you? You must be someone. You're not just some random guy. Frankly, you are very impressive and your existence requires explanation. And so we need to give an answer to those who sent us. What do you say about yourself? And he said, I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness. Make straight the way of the Lord, as the prophet Isaiah said. Now they had been sent from the Pharisees, and they asked him, then why are you baptizing, if you are neither the Christ, nor Elijah, nor the prophet? If you want to know who the prophet is that they're talking about, you can feel free to ask me later. It's not that important for the purpose of today, so I'm not going to explain that. Verse 26, John answered them, I baptize with water, but among you stands one you do not know, he who comes after me, the strap of whose sandal I am not worthy to untie. So here's the thing. Not only did John the Baptist have this paparazzi problem, right, of all these people keep coming up asking him, are you the Messiah? And he's like, no, I'm not the guy. But this problem for John became such a big problem that it became a problem for the early church and for the Jesus movement. It was this, they had this, like, this PR problem where lots of people were just confused about John the Baptist. And this problem is reflected in all four Gospels. So pick a Gospel, any Gospel, they all start with John the Baptist. They all start by saying, all right, here is the story of the Gospel of the Messiah. Now, before you ask, it's not John the Baptist, okay? So if that was your question, you can just put your hand down. It's not him. And like this particular episode of John's denying that he's the Messiah and saying he's not worthy to untie the sandals of the Messiah. That episode is on a short list of stories that make it into all four Gospels. They all start with John the Baptist with some explanation of how John fits into this picture of the Jesus story, but isn't the Messiah. And Luke even throws in a really long, miraculous birth story for John the Baptist that's as elaborate as Jesus' miraculous birth story. Because he's just like, people are just going to ask. People are going to want to know. And so they had to manage this really stubborn misconception that John was the Messiah, which he wasn't, just to be clear. And so this confusion also worked the other way around as well. So not only did people think that John was the Messiah, but also a whole lot of people seemed to think that Jesus was just John the Baptist, right? So if you go to Mark chapter 8, starting at verse 27, and Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they told him, "John the Baptist." And also others say Elijah, and others one of the prophets. One of the prophets we won't even bother naming, but John the Baptist is answer number one. I love how immediate the answer is in this passage. Like, they apparently don't need to deliberate on this. They don't even seem to find the question odd. Like, if Sam were to ask me, "Who do people say that I am?" I would be like, "Sam Lim? Like, why is that a question? I don't know." And so the disciples don't respond by saying, "What do you mean, who do people say that I am?" They know the answer. Oh, people think you're John the Baptist. That's their number one answer. And so, because the thing was, people heard about Jesus and all his amazing deeds, and their first explanation was, "Oh, it must be John the Baptist." That's how people thought about John the Baptist. And we read elsewhere, I think we got it, Matthew 14, we read of how the guy who killed John the Baptist, King Herod Antipas, he was also one of these people who heard about Jesus' amazing deeds, and he thought, "Well, how can I explain these amazing things that have happened? I guess it must be John the Baptist." And what's hilarious is this: Herod thought this after Herod had himself beheaded John the Baptist, right? So the fact that John the Baptist was dead didn't prevent Herod from entertaining the idea that he was still out there preaching, which I find amazing. He's like, "I don't know what else to tell you. I have no other explanation. It must be John the Baptist. Yes, I know he was decapitated, but if anyone can pull off recapitation, it's John the Baptist." Right? So, because that was just his best explanation for what he heard about these amazing things that were being done. And we also know some things. This is piling up, right? There's so much here. And there's so much I've left out as well. But we know some things outside of the Bible about John the Baptist. I don't know if you all know that, but there was this ancient historian called Josephus. And when I say ancient historian, I mean like a real ancient historian. He's not like one of these modern people who writes about ancient things. He was an actual ancient guy, an ancient Jew, who wrote about a bunch of stuff that is now to us ancient history, but to him was actually kind of modern history. Anyway, Josephus, he was a Jewish writer who wrote around the same time as the Gospels were being written, and he mentions Jesus, and he also mentions John the Baptist, but he writes more about John the Baptist than he does about Jesus. And he goes into more detail about John the Baptist. He seems to have heard more about John the Baptist than he has about Jesus, and he goes into some details and background on John's death that the Gospels don't go into, namely that Herod Antipas had John killed because Herod was threatened by John's fame and his influence. He was worried that John was so popular and so disruptive that his ministry might lead to an uprising against Herod. So people in power were threatened by John. And we also see this in the Gospels, because we see in places like Mark 11, which I don't think will come up on the screen, but we read of how the chief priests, the top dogs in the Temple of Jerusalem, they didn't like John the Baptist because he kept telling them off, but they were afraid to denounce John's ministry. They were afraid to deny that he was a true prophet because they knew he was so popular among the people. Okay, so John the Baptist was a huge deal, is my point. I hope I've shown you this, that John the Baptist was this brilliant, popular, notorious, towering figure in his day. He was the greatest prophet who had ever lived. For real, greater than Moses, greater than Joshua or David or Isaiah or Elijah. He was the GOAT. But hardly anyone even knows this for one very good reason, which is that John did all of this incredible stuff right before Jesus showed up and showed up on the scene and completely upstaged him, right? Completely just outdid him, overshadowed him, totally stole the show. Like if there had just been a buffer zone, you know, of a few centuries or something, if they were just born at different times, John totally would have had a book deal. He definitely would have had a whole book of the Bible written about him, for sure. Like, no doubt. But instead, John the Baptist is like, he's like an athlete who runs in the 100-meter sprint in the Olympics, and he breaks the world record. But then he doesn't make the news that week, and he never becomes a household name because he comes second to someone else who just wins the race and smashes the world record by like some unprecedented superhuman margin, right? So the guy who comes second, his incredible feat, just kind of gets lost to history because it happened at the same time as another way more incredible feat. John the Baptist is one of those... He's one of those people in history whose utter brilliance and glory gets forgotten about because he happened to be born at the same time as a person who surpassed everyone. So it's like a second person on the moon, or like the other woman in Destiny's Child, not Beyonce, not Kelly, but the other one, who's probably an amazing singer. Does someone know her name? Yeah. Michelle, thank you. Some people know. You know who John the Baptist is like? He's like Will Smith's Oscar in 2022, which he won. He won an Oscar, but did you know that? No, because we all got a little distracted when he slapped Chris Rock in the face, and that just took over all the news. Like, it was Will's first Oscar after having been nominated two times before that. Could have been huge news, but no. We got distracted by something else. And so, can you just imagine that you're the greatest man ever? Just try to imagine that. And the only person who could possibly surpass you is literally God. And out of all the times that God could choose to show up, he shows up in the middle of your career and then does surpass you and upstages you. So John lived this life of towering achievement. He outdid everyone who had ever gone before him, only to become a footnote in someone else's story. And I don't know how you would feel if you were John. But I know exactly how John would feel if he were John, because he was John. That's a weird joke. But we know how John felt about this, is what I'm saying, because he told us how he felt. And the thing is, John's response to this was that he was overjoyed. He was overjoyed. So if we go to John's Gospel, chapter 3, starting verse 22, it says, "After this, Jesus and his disciples went out into the Judean countryside where he spent some time with them and baptized." So Jesus did some baptizing. Now John also was baptizing at Aenon near Salim because there was plenty of water. And people were coming and being baptized. This was before John had been put in prison. An argument developed between some of John's disciples and a certain Jew, some guy, over the matter of ceremonial washing. And they came to John and said to him, "Rabbi, that man who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, the one you testified about," they're talking about Jesus, "look, he is baptizing and everyone is going to him." To this, John replied, "A person can receive only what is given them from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I said, I am not the Messiah, but am sent ahead of him. The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine, and it is now complete." Now that all my disciples are leaving me and becoming disciples of Jesus, now my joy is complete. He must increase. I must decrease. And as we've seen, it's not like John was someone who had nothing to lose. You know, it's not like he didn't have any fame that he might have liked to hold on to. Right? He was sought after. He had fame and recognition. He had notoriety. He had followers. He had every reason to resent his diminishment into the shadow of Jesus, because he was incredible, the GOAT, the greatest man who had ever lived. And God asked him to be mostly forgotten and to be upstaged by Jesus. And this was an assignment that John received with overwhelming joy, right? And so here it is. Here it comes. Is the scary part. But just the one point of this whole message, which is this: that God gives us the same assignment. God asks us the same thing. Be upstaged. Would you allow yourself to be overshadowed by Jesus in your life? Would you move to the side and let him take center stage? Would you allow for your whole life and all your accomplishments and your dreams and your goals and your achievements to be overshadowed by Christ's life in you? Would it be okay with you to be forgotten if it meant that Jesus was remembered? So I might get the whole entire band to join me. And so I'm just going to speak for myself, because, you know, this is going to be different for different people. But it's actually helpful that Sam gave a bit of intro about me, because I was going to talk a bit about just my story of moving here. Because I moved to Melbourne from Sydney just under 2 years ago. I think it'll be 2 years. And I moved here to do two things. One was to be part of Flow Church and to help build this church and make it happen. And the other is while I'm doing that to go to Bible college and study theology and to get trained for ministry. And this was a beginning of a new path for me. Back in Sydney, I was just doing other things. And so it was a big step for me, stopping everything else I was doing and coming back, coming here for the first time, to work in church ministry and to start to move potentially to a life of ministry. And so as I moved here, I asked a bunch of people, mostly back in Sydney, to be praying for me for this season, particularly while I'm studying. And so I write them newsletters with prayer requests and stuff like that. And at the beginning of this, I was thinking about, okay, well, what's the key prayer here? What's the long-term prayer? What's the big prayer, not just for this week or this month, but for this whole project? And at this time, this whole John the Baptist thing was also on my mind. It was something I was pondering. So then eventually it hit me, okay, there's the prayer. There's the prayer that he would increase, that in this season, Jesus would increase and I would decrease in my life. Because it's very easy, to speak frankly, it's very easy when you're going to Bible college and ministry, it's very easy to want to become known. To want to make a name for yourself. And it's very easy when you jump on board with a church plant, pretty easy for you to want your church to become the hot new thing that takes over the world and becomes known. But no, the mission of this church is not that we would become known. It's that Christ would become more known in some part because of us, even if it means that we are never known and our contribution is never recognized. And so I found this a scary prayer to pray, that in my time at Bible college, I might decrease and he might increase. That I'm going to Melbourne and into ministry not to make a name for myself, but to be forgotten, to diminish, to be upstaged by Christ, to vanish into his story. And the scary part for me was just thinking, okay, what is God going to do to me over these years to achieve this in me? Like, what is going to need to happen to me in order for God to humble me? And that was quite scary. But honestly, as I look back now, because I started reflecting on this particularly as I was preparing this message, as I look back on now, God has been so kind. He's been so gentle in how he has crushed my ego. And he's done it through relatively benign experiences that have been relatively painless, but also transformative. Because I've heard it said that only God is both powerful enough and tender enough to humble us without humiliating us. Because have you ever tried to humble somebody? Like, to put someone in their place when they're being arrogant? Because we are so clumsy that when we try to humble somebody, we tend to wind up humiliating them. But God isn't interested in our humiliation. He's interested in our humility. And he doesn't, when we try to humble other people, it often is because of our pride and we're trying to exalt ourselves. But God doesn't humble us so that he can exalt himself over us. He humbles us so that he can get close to us because he loves us. And because if we don't have humility, a relationship with God just cannot work. It just can't work. Because whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. And I do have a suspicion that part of the reason why the ways in which God has humbled me in over this past couple of years, part of why that's been relatively painless is because I was cooperating, because I kind of preempted it. I just started to walk myself down to the lowest seat at the table rather than waiting for God to have to push me there. Because honestly, there have been other times in the past, and maybe you can relate, where I was not cooperating and where the humbling came as a surprise and I was not inviting God to come and humble me, and he still humbled me because he loves me and I needed it. But it hurt so much more. It was so much more messy, more disruptive, and sometimes a little bit humiliating. And so here's the call at the start of a new year, as you think about your goals and your aspirations and dreams and plans, would you let Jesus upstage them all? Let Jesus take center stage in your life. Let him be the main character. Let his story be the prevailing narrative in your life while you step into the supporting role. And so we're going to take a moment to reflect in silence. I'd love us to, and after a moment of reflection, I've got this prayer that I want us to look at, that we'll look up, put up on the screen. But as we be still for a minute, I would love us to think about what it could mean for you this year to decrease. What if this year was a year that you pursued less of you and more of Jesus? Because the gospel is not so much that Jesus enters into our story, it's more that we get to enter into his story. And as we go deeper into life with Jesus, we have to more and more let his story overtake our own. So let's just take a minute in silent prayer and reflection. Okay, so we've got this prayer that we're going to put up on the screen, and it's called the Litany of Humility. And we're not going to sort of pray it out loud together. And I'm not even going to try and get you to repeat it after me, partly because it's a bit long. It's actually 3 slides. There's more slides coming. But also because, honestly, this prayer is absolutely bonkers. This prayer is just possibly the most hardcore prayer I have ever seen. And honestly, I don't know how much of it we can all pray and really mean it right now. And so I'm gonna read out the words and let them, you know, be spoken over us, and let's mean it as much as we can to the extent that that's possible for us right now. Yeah. Okay. So I'll read this. Oh Jesus, meek and humble of heart, hear me. Deliver me, O Jesus, from the desire of being esteemed, from the desire of being loved, from the desire of being extolled, from the desire of being honored, from the desire of being praised, from the desire of being preferred to others, from the desire of being consulted, from the desire of being approved. Deliver me, O Jesus, from the fear of being humiliated, from the fear of being despised, from the fear of suffering rebukes, from the fear of being slandered, from the fear of being forgotten, from the fear of being ridiculed, from the fear of being wronged, from the fear of being suspected. Jesus, grant me the grace to desire that others might be loved more than I, that others may be esteemed more than I, that in the opinion of the world others may increase and I may decrease, that others may be chosen and I set aside, that others may be praised and I may go unnoticed, that others may be preferred to me in everything, that others may become holier than I, provided that I become as holy as I should. Amen. So, Jesus, thank you that you are meek and humble of heart. Thank you that you chose the lowest place. And so, help us to come down and meet you there. Jesus, come and upstage us, overshadow us. May we truly say with your Apostle Paul that it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Thank you, God.